So now we are getting more into the what we should do, because as we have covered in the past few chapters, what is the purpose of life and how material life and spiritual life, what is the difference, and how material life can give us certain joy, but if we want something permanent, we have to select the spiritual. And man has always been on the crossroads, which one is suitable for me. One is the path of pleasure, they call it prayer, the path of pleasure, and the other is the path of good. And we are made, the choice is there constantly throughout our life. We find that we are faced with this. This is going to give me pleasure, but this is good for me. This is mine and this is for others. And so today, we'll go into the more details of how I can pursue my spiritual growth. It's in chapter 6, but the material I have is quite different. Some of it is from that, so you're welcome to read it at home. Chapter 6, just I'll try to highlight some of the points and some other ideas that came to me as I was reading it. So it says that for this growth, when I need to grow, I need to do certain spiritual activities. I need to put effort. And effort is required in any growth. A plant, a seed, when it has to grow and become a plant and then become a tree, how much effort is required for that little shoot to break through the earth, crack the earth open and then come out? How does it do that? Tiny, weak little plant. But it's the effort. It's self-effort because it knows I need to grow. I need to express my full potential. A seed that ultimately will become a mango tree or become a beautiful flower, tree or a flower plant. So its full potential is expressed finally when it fruits and it becomes the fruit or gives the flowers and spreads fragrance and beauty. So what is the effort that is required for us? Because we are also lying covered in this mud of ignorance. And for me to get out of that, I have to put effort. And that is called sadhana. Sadhana are the spiritual practices that are required for me to get out of this covering of ignorance, this deep mud of ignorance. And I have to put in effort. It's not going to happen by itself. The plant, we cannot say, it will happen. No, the plant has to put the effort. The gardener cannot separate the mud and pull the plant out. Gardener cannot help. Gardener can water. Gardener can give fertilizer. But the plant has to put its own effort. So in our case, the fertilizer, the help is from the scriptures. It's from God. God can, they say, God will take care of it. No, God will only provide you the opportunity. The spiritual literature, the masters, the prophets who came, the guidance, but ultimately it is up to us. So the guru can only give us guidance. It is me who has to sit down and put the effort. And they say that there are two aspects to our personality, the higher and the lower. What is the lower? Lower is this world. That's what Krishna even says in the Bhagavad Gita, that this whole universe is my lower nature. Lower and higher is not that it's high in height, but lower and higher in stature. Like they say, the CEO is the highest officer in the company. He's the head of the company. But his office doesn't have to be on the ground floor. In fact, doesn't have to be on top. His office may be on the ground floor in a corner. It may even be in a different building, but they know. So similarly, what is my higher nature? My higher nature is Om, the divinity, the consciousness. That is what is my higher nature. And my lower nature is this body, mind, and intellect, and the perceiver, feeler, and thinker. And similarly, this whole universe of objects, emotions, and thoughts is God's lower nature. God's higher nature is the divinity, but his lower nature is this world. It does not mean that this world is inferior or something I should neglect, but I should realize that this will only take me so far. A lower It's like an elevator that only goes to the second floor will only take you to the second floor. But then if you really want to go to the penthouse or the top floor, there's a special elevator reserved for the executives. And for that, you need a special key. Maybe you need a special, pass. And using that, you can go. So similarly, for us also, in our spiritual journey, we can either be stuck on the lower floors of life, or we can, through this special pass, which is the spirituality, which is the right knowledge, go to the highest floor, the penthouse, where God resides, where he lives, and that is my goal. So then people say, should we renounce? All the literature talks about Buddha, how he left the world and left his kingdom and became a monk. Christ, left his work and wandered for many years and, studied and meditated and then finally came back. So do we have to do that? People always think in this world it's so difficult. It's so hard. We're so caught in the world. There are so many problems and there's so much. I have to deal with my children, my spouse, my work, my business, my social life, my community life. And where is the time for spirituality? Maybe it's best if I can become like Buddha, leave the whole world and go live in a forest or live in some mountain or in a monastery. But that's not possible for the majority of us. If somebody has that strong desire to do that, that's good. But most of us cannot. So what they say is that you continue to work where you are, but it's not renunciation, it's recognition. So what is recognition? Cognition means knowing again. See, we have forgotten because we all are that essence, that spirituality, that Om, that is our true essence. And we have forgotten that. And as long as we forget that, we will be caught in the world. So what the masters are telling us that yes, you are this lower nature, this body, mind, and intellect, but that is a temporary situation that you have taken. But we all are that spiritual essence functioning through this body, mind, and intellect. So this body, mind, and intellect is my equipment, is not me. And that is what we have to understand. Now, this consciousness or this Lord or this divinity that is within me and that is everywhere. In fact, when we say it's God's lower nature, it means God is everywhere. He is everything. But what is the essential nature of that divinity? So the scriptures tell us that its nature is threefold: existence, consciousness, and bliss. It's not that there are three qualities or three attributes. It is all three. It is all of those. And that is me. So what is existence? Existence is God is permanent, exists. So anything that exists is divinity. Like this chair exists, this mic exists, this book exists, I exist. So anything that exists is that existence, that consciousness, that divinity which exists and which has existed forever. That's why they say God alone was, and then he created the universe in 6 days, and the seventh day he rested. So before the universe came into being, God alone was. And this universe is not only this visible universe with stars and planets, but even the higher worlds, the heavens, and the lower world, the so-called hell, all of them are that one consciousness. So that exists. And I also exist. I am existing. I am. The second is consciousness. And I am conscious, you are conscious, we are all conscious. The chair is not conscious. Otherwise, it would have long time ago walked away out of boredom that this talk is not any fun. But the chair is sitting because it's not conscious. So you and I are conscious. And that is why we are able to listen, we are able to communicate, we are able to hear. And that consciousness also comes from God. So the existence of mind, my consciousness, awareness, and we also bliss. So the third aspect of this consciousness is bliss. And bliss is infinite, eternal joy. It is not joy caused by something. See, in our case, if I get an ice cream, you know, I get joy, or a pizza, I get joy, or I get a diamond ring, or I get a new set of golf clubs, or a new car, or a new spouse, or a new girlfriend. So these are the sources of joy for us: a new house, a new profession, a new job, a new business. But these are all temporary, because whether it is people, whether it is situations, whether it is objects, for a while there will be joy, and then, you know, there will be problem. You marry somebody, for a while there is, you know, happiness, and then, you know, the problems start. In fact, you know what they say, that if it wasn't for marriage, men would go through life thinking that they have no faults at all. So the problems start, whether it's a relationship, whether it's an object. One time it is providing you service, the car is new, it runs well, and then once it starts getting old, the house starts getting old, then all the problems start. But bliss is my own true nature. I am of the nature of bliss. And when I experience that inner bliss, then the world cannot give me that same happiness. Nothing in the world can give me that same joy as I experience when I go into my own depths in meditation. And once you experience that, once you have tasted that, then yes, if the world is happy, fine. If the world is not happy, I am still fine. Why? Because I have tasted that inner joy, that inner bliss. So the fact that I exist and I am conscious and I am seeking for bliss, seeking for happiness, proves that I am that infinite state. I am not this limited individuality. Now the question next is, what is the difference between animal and man? Now if you look at animals, they are very much similar to us. You know, a sparrow, male sparrow meets a female sparrow. They build a beautiful house. They have children. So they have procreation. They have, you know, they also eat. They also sleep. They also procreate. They also build a house. They have children. They teach them to fly and go away. And man does the same thing. Yes, our house may be bigger. You know, you may have a house on the golf course or on the by the ocean or on top of the mountain, but it is the similar house as a sparrow's nest. We also need to eat, we need to sleep, we need to procreate, and we do that, and we have children, and we teach them how to function in the world, just as a sparrow teaches her children how to fly. And we also make them, you know, able to function, send them through school, college, and then we die. So what is the difference between me and a sparrow? What is the difference between me and an animal? It is the desire to know myself, to realize the truth. A sparrow will not sit and meditate and say, who am I? A dog or a donkey or a lion does not. That's what distinct. So unless I'm going to inquire into the nature of who am I am not any better than an animal. So if I want to say I am better than an animal, then I have to pursue this spiritual growth, this spiritual pursuit, and inquire into who am I? What is my purpose in life? Why am I here on this earth? A lion never asks. He just goes about his business, kills the deer, eats it, and that's it. He doesn't think anymore until he's hungry again. But you and I are more than that, and that is what the saints tell us, that you are that divinity, you are that Om, you are that consciousness. You are not an animal, you are not a limited human being. You are a lot more. But this I am that, what does it mean? You know, people start thinking, does that mean I am God? No, we never say that I am God. What we say, God is everything. Everything is God, and so am I. If God is this chair and this tree and this house and this, then God is me too. So everything is God, including me, and I just have to recognize that I am as much divine as, you know, I have the same potential to become Jesus, to become Buddha, to become Shankaracharya, to become Mahatma Gandhi. these great souls realized their potential and tapped into it and accomplished so much, but you and I are equally capable of recognizing our true nature as self, as consciousness. All we have to do is turn the direction from the world, turn it inwards and discover my true nature. Now, what happens to such an individual who reduces his ego? See, the ego is the problem. I and my, that is the biggest problem. I am this, somebody special, and this is mine. And so when this is mine, it's not yours. And it's not yours, then I become proud. Oh, I have it, you don't have it. And if somebody has more, then I want to compete. I want to accomplish more. I want to get more. And so this I and my is basically what ego is. So when a person gives up the ego, then such a person becomes an instrument of the Lord. And then the Lord functions through such a person. So the moment you give up the ego, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, then you become an instrument of God. Because right away to understand that I am that divinity is very difficult for us to practice. So you can start by saying, I am a humble instrument. God has placed me here. And whatever I'm doing is his work. And he has given me, or she, you know, if you worship the mother goddess, we're not saying God is only he or she. But that divinity has given me the ability to work, has given me the knowledge. And so I am a humble instrument. Now, instrument cannot do its own thing. Like if you are playing a violin. Now, you are a good violinist and you have learned and you're playing and you're doing playing a beautiful tune. Now, the violin decides, I'm not going to play what this guy is telling me. I'm going to play my own tune. Violin A won't do it. But if it starts doing it, what are you going to do? You're going to throw it away and say, I don't need this. I am the one who decides. So similarly, when we say we are instruments of God, then we should not play our own music. I should not play my music. Let God play music through me and let me become an instrument. And then what happens? Such a person's life is divine because then God is working through him. And that's what they say, that give your charge of your life to God and say, okay, you are responsible for my life. Actually, he is. We just have this false notion of ego that I am in charge. Actually, we are in charge of nothing. Everything is happening because of the divine presence. All I can do is mess it up or ruin it. That's all my abilities are. So if you can give up your I and my, be an instrument and work for the benefit of all, then your life will become pure. And that is what the saints were. And we all can do that as long as we realize that there is a higher power working through me. And ultimately, the goal of that is Advaita. Dvaita means two. Advaita means not two. And all the scriptures, the Hindu scriptures, all teach this same, which the Bhagavad Gita, which we are doing on Sundays also, teaches us that there is not two. There is only one. And God and I are not separate. As we said, if everything is God, then how can I be separate? But we always think of God as somebody sitting up in the above the cloud in the heavens watching over me. No, he's talking through us. He's listening through us. He's functioning. So not only unity between me and God, but unity between me and all. All plants, all animals, all birds, all fish, all humans, they're all me. They're all one. So that is the final message of Advaita, that there are not two. So whether it's Hindu or Muslim or Christian, whether it's male or female, young or old, short or tall, even all animals, birds, they are all me. So then what this person who has understood this Advaita, this non-dual self, then develops spontaneous love for all because they are all me. Just as my foot, I love as much as my hand. You're not saying I love my hand more and my foot less. No, I love every part of me equally. And any part of me hurts, I immediately take care of it. So similarly, a wise person loves all. And if anybody is hurting, whether it's an animal, whether it's a bird, whether it's a plant, whether it's a human, they get spontaneous love for that person. And then such a person who has discovered his divine nature as the self, then goes beyond pairs of opposites. What do we mean by pairs of opposites? So at the body level, it is health and ill health. Sometimes the body is healthy, sometimes the body is not healthy. Sometimes the body is fine, sometimes the body is in pain. So that is pair of opposites. At the mind level, it is joy and sorrow. Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes unhappy. Somebody loves me, I am very happy. And somebody doesn't love me, I become miserable. And at the intellect level, it is success and failure. So one day I'm successful in some project, in some projects I am not. So what happens to us, most of us, that when things are going well, everything is fine, I'm happy. And then the moment the sorrow comes, I get depressed, I get sad. And I take to alcohol or drugs or, you know, some addictions. Why? Because I am going through these pairs of opposites. So once I have understood that I am that divinity, then in life there will be problems. At the body level, we are all getting old. Sooner or later, we'll start getting arthritis and back pain and knee pain and high blood pressure, diabetes, heart problems. It's bound to happen. It happens to everybody. Nobody can escape it. At the mind level, there will be sometimes joy, sometimes sorrow, sometimes success, sometimes failure. But a wise person knows that this is all happening to the body, to the mind, to the intellect. They are not happening to me because I am beyond all that. So such a person will go through life. Yes, there will be joys and sorrows, aches and pains, but he'll say that belongs to the body, it belongs to the mind. I am free from all that. And that state can be accomplished in this life itself. We don't have to die. We don't have to. It can be accomplished. And that's what the saints tell us. Now they say, where can we find this God? You know, they say he is within us. Now where is he? We say, well, he's in every cell. Yes. No, but I want his address. I want to know where I can find God. And they say, yes, you can find him. As we had talked before, just as the U.S. government is everywhere, but if I want to contact, say, the Department of Agriculture, I need a contract or I have a problem, I go to Washington, D.C. Even though the government is everywhere, to contact the government, I go to Washington, D.C. The California government extends everywhere from Northern California all the way to San Diego. But if I want to contact the government, where do I go? I go to Sacramento, the capital. So similarly, where do I find God? So they say, find him in your heart. Heart is not the pumping heart. It's not the mechanical heart which pumps the blood. Heart is said to be the mind and intellect which is pure. A pure mind which doesn't have too many negativities, anger, greed, and an intellect which has the right knowledge. When the two combine, when the intellect is with the right knowledge, the heart that is pure, so in the core of my personality, so where does God reside? In the mind and intellect, which is the core of my personality, appears to be covered. It appears to be covered. I'm not able to see it, but a wise person who has purified his heart, made himself pure, has the right knowledge and then goes inward, finds that. So that's the capital. If you want to find God, where is God's address? Within, in your heart, in the core of your personality. So that is where we can find this truth. So in meditation, that's why today, in fact, we'll be meditating on that same idea, that go within and discover that, and constant practice of that will lead us to that truth. So that is called God's address. Then the heart is the core of the personality, the mind and intellect, which is subtle, which is pure. And there are four paths, which we have talked about also in the past, but just to outline them, one is the path of service. So I must serve, because the world gives us so much, especially in this country. You have so many comforts, so many things which people in the other parts of the world don't have. Running water, electricity, having a bathroom, That's a luxury in many parts of the world. They do not have, they go to the well and bring water. The electricity comes for 2 hours a day or sometimes doesn't come at all. Bathrooms are a luxury in many parts of the world. In fact, the Prime Minister of India, Modi, this, the new one who is a very great idealistic, his goal is to make a bathroom in every village. Can you imagine there are so many villages that don't have toilets? So his goal is that I'm going to make sure that every Indian has an access. So things like that, which we take for granted, but so I have to serve. I have to give back to society. So the path of service, the path of love, as we said, I have to love God and I have to love all beings. The path of knowledge, studying these books and other books that we have, studying the scriptures. And then the path of renunciation. Renunciation does not mean giving up the world, but living in the world, but not being of the world. So not have letting the world take over you. I continue to work in the world, but I realize that my goal is higher. So through service, through love, through right knowledge, and through detachment, where I no longer depend on the world for happiness, I am detached from the world. So when these four paths are practiced, and they all may not, everybody may not be equally good. Somebody may be good in working. Somebody who is very emotional will love God and love all beings. Somebody who likes to read may use the path of knowledge or the path of detachment. But all four of these can be practiced to a greater and lesser degree. So once we practice all this and we put the right effort, and we know who we are, then that is the path of spiritual growth. There are a lot of ideas because this chapter was fairly long. So I have tried to cover it in half an hour, but I would encourage you to all go home and read this more carefully because Swami Chinmayananda has done a wonderful job. I just highlighted some of the main points of this particular chapter. It's a pretty lengthy chapter, so it will take you a while, so probably go home and read it. If you don't have this book, we do have it. It's $9 if you'd like to take it today, and then you can pay whenever you want. But because this is the one we are doing, and we'll be doing it for the next few months. And it's a very beautiful book because it's meditation and life, how meditation can change my life. I think most of you have it. So any questions or comments about any of these points? Yes.
What does renunciation or detachment feel like?
I think the way to practice renunciation, what I have heard is that what I not able to practice all the time is to be a witness and watch. So what you do is you watch what you watch your mind and say, okay, my mind is now happy. My mind is unhappy. That's a very beautiful way to practice renunciation. So constantly throughout the day, as often as I remember, it's not possible. Sometimes you're very engrossed in a particular job and that is fine. But when you're doing something that is does not require too much attention, like you're on a treadmill or on a bike, or on a machine, or you are doing the dishes, or you are vacuuming the floor, or you know, mowing the lawn, you know, doing something that is mechanical, that does not require, then at that point, become a witness. And you say, okay, I'm mowing the lawn. I'm not mowing the lawn. I am watching this body that is mowing the lawn. Or I am watching this body that is walking on the treadmill. Or I'm watching this individual who is doing the dishes. So I am not doing the dishes, but I am watching this person who is doing the dishes. So developing this, and at the same time, when the mind is happy or unhappy, you don't say, I am happy or unhappy. My mind is happy or my mind is unhappy. But I am neither the happy mind nor the unhappy mind. I am the witness. See, the witness is like, say, suppose somebody is standing on his balcony and watches, you know, and he sees, you know, a person coming and shooting another and running away, then the police asks him, did you see it? He says, yeah. But I was not involved. I was neither the shooter nor the shot. But I was present when the shooting occurred. And so he becomes a witness. He can testify in court. I saw this person. I recognize him. He picks him out of a lineup. So similarly, as this person standing on the balcony witnessed the act of murder but was not himself involved, so similarly, I become a witness of what my body is doing, what my mind is doing, what my intellect is doing. I continue to do my activities but develop this healthy detachment. And so slowly what happens is once you detach from your body, mind and intellect, and once you reach that inner silence, then you also get detached from the world. Detached does not mean I don't love people, but I do not depend on people for my happiness. And that happens with practice. You know, once in a while you will get so disillusioned. Oh, why did he do this? Why did this happen? Why did that? Why did, you know, so and so, you know, and we are so involved in this and the activity. But you say that, yes, it is a play. See, what they say is watch the world like a play. Just as when you go to watch a movie, you know, some people get so involved when the heroine is, you know, getting hurt and we also start crying. And when the hero is winning and punching the villain, we also get very happy. Wow, wow, that's good. But you watch it like a movie and you come out and say, okay, you know, there was a hero, there was a villain, there was a heroine, and there was they fell in love and then the villain came. All those things happened, but that was just on the screen. Actually, it's not real. The person playing the role is sitting comfortably in Beverly Hills, but in the movie, you know, she's playing the role of a, you know, poor person begging on the streets and getting mistreated. That's not really her. So just as that movie you watch, so watch this world like a play. Watch it like a movie. Yes, there is a drama going on. People are playing their role. Trump is playing his role and Hillary and Obama and everything is going on. Why should I get so caught up in it? It's happening. Let it happen. And similarly, I am also playing a role. I have been given a job. My name is John or Shana or Anil or Tony. This is my name. This is my occupation. This is my job. And that is my role I have been assigned. There is a director sitting up there who has assigned me this job. And I do my role to the best of my ability, but do it with a healthy detachment. So the more you realize your true nature as the consciousness, the more you will detach. So that is detachment, becoming a witness and watching the body, mind and intellect and watching the world also. As a play. Don't take the world too seriously. Take it as a joke. I think when we take things too seriously, that's when we get upset. It's all happening. And, you know, life is a great big joke. And I find that helps a lot. I think, I don't know, have I answered your question?
Yes, you have.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a body, mind, and an intellect to be a witness.
Right. Yes.
So who's the one that's joyous and happy?
That's the body, mind, and intellect.
The body, mind, and intellect is the ones that
are going through joy, sorrow, success, failure, heat, and cold. But I am none of those. I am neither joy nor sorrow. I am eternal bliss, which is joy and sorrow. It depends on an object. Getting something makes me joy. Losing it gives me sorrow. But when I am that eternal bliss, and I am watching those three, then I am uninvolved. So who is suffering? The BMI.
Enjoying.
Suffering and enjoying, yes.
Happiness, body, mind.
Yes.